Hi, welcome back to Drinks First. Today I have a really great guest that I'm excited to talk to. We've obviously met a few times, but I feel like this is like a great chance for us to really get to know each other. And we met, I think, at one of my events for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were super friendly. You came up to me and my, I brought like a childhood friend and yeah, you just came up chatting and I was like, oh, that's good vibes.
Yeah, which is awesome. Welcome to the show. Mm-hmm. And we're going to just start with some like preliminary stuff. So do you mind telling me how old you are and where you're from?
Yeah, I can definitely do that. So hi, I am 26 and I grew up in Northern New Jersey. Passaic, if you know it, but just think Northern.
And how did you end up in New York?
This is going to sound so cheesy. It's going to sound indie movie of me. So I grew up on, there was a lot of elevation in my town. And so you could see the skyline. And I just felt like really out of place in my hometown. And I was just like, yeah, New York's where I got to be. My journey. So I found my way here. I got a job here. And it was all around beforehand. Like I was in 2-3 different states. But then finally made my way here.
Oh, wow. What states were you in? Did you go to college?
Yeah. I went to college in Connecticut, like kind of New London area. Mm-hmm. And we might get into it later, but I got this scholarship and I went away to a boarding school, which was in a different state in Pennsylvania.
Where did you go to boarding school?
It's a place called the George School. it's like a Quaker boarding school in Pennsylvania.
Okay. What was that like?
You're so interested. You're like, yeah, it was honestly exactly what I needed at the time. Like no cheesy shit. Like, you know, I didn't feel like I was liking the person that my environment was making me become. Mm. And I got like a kind of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory moment. I got my little golden ticket in the form of the scholarship. And I was originally supposed to go to, I think at the time, the 11th worst high school in New Jersey.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah. So I was like, shit, I got a chance. All right, let's go. So yeah, I was going in with a positive feeling and that stayed throughout, mm-hmm. but it was transformative as well. Because Quakers are big on like community and like making sure you feel heard by your community. Mm. It's just something that I feel like everyone on earth should have that. But you know, we both know that's not the case. So
was it your choice to like pursue that scholarship and go to that school?
No. So that's a good question. I was in like a kind of specialized classes in my middle school and the teacher, there was one day they brought in some representatives from the scholarship program and they just got us. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I got back to my homeroom, my teacher was like, hey, make sure you bring this home to your family. And I brought it home and my sister was like, oh, I recognize that. Like, you know, let's not like, my mom thought it was just spam. Like, cause it like the way it sounds is kind of crazy. It's like, hey, poor child, poor smart child. would you like to change everything forever?
Come to
exactly.
Us.
No, like free of charge, you know, we're just going to change your life forever. My mom is like, I came to America. I know what a scam looks like.
Where's your mom from?
She's Guyanese. Mm. So both my parents. And so my sister, her speaking up in that moment, like it changed my timeline pretty much. She was just like, yeah, my friend went through that. She's at Harvard now. My mom was like, Harvard?
I know. That's all it takes for an immigrant parent. Exactly. They hear Harvard and they're like, sign me up.
Exactly. We got him, boy. Oh, man. So I was like, seeing my mom light up like that, it doesn't happen too often. You know, she got that immigrant jadedness. So seeing this thing like associated with me that she was lighting up about and like, oh, wow, like the looking at the future in this way. I was like, OK, no, this is a good reaction. Mm. And even at my young age, I was like, I should go towards this. So I put all my effort in. I didn't really try too much in school before then, but in that moment, I was like, all right, let's get into it. Let's get serious. And it was the best decision ever.
I'm guessing because it's like a Quaker boarding school, it must have been a private school, right?
Yes, absolutely. Definitely private school. Well-resourced. costed as much as my college. And my college was like no slouch. So yeah, it was an expensive thing. Very much where the elite are reproduced. They have less qualms about like looking wealthy. Like even if you go to a hoity-toity like college, people are at past 18, people are generally aware. They're like, all right, like I just shouldn't flex that hard. Like, you know, some poor person might see, you know, like just like some a normal human thing.
Yeah. I mean, I also like I went from a public school to a private school in my high school years. And it was such a stark difference between how people acted and what they cared about and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I understand the like the switch that you went through.
Exactly. It's the thing I've come to terms with is that it's as much a part of me as anything else. Mm-hmm. Like my upbringing, you know, was very vastly different, and I think most kids that left that environment are like, oh, I have to like choose, or I have to choose when to bring it up, or I have to choose like which of these me's to be. But I think like, you know, I was just like, oh, I accept it. You know, people go like, oh, you're a little bit whitewashed. And I'm like, yeah, like I was in a very specific environment. Like I can't help that. I knew what it was going to do for my, you know, I knew what I had at risk and what the stakes were. Stepping away from that would have been very different for my life and my family's life, you know? So I just take it as it was.
And where did you end up in college?
Right. I went to Connecticut College, one of those like kind of NESCACs.
So another like white liberal <You know. laughs> art school.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. They love me.
And what was that like?
it was different. I mean, they love like nautical culture. Like I don't know. Like the sailing team was big.
Yeah.
They had too much power. They needed to be stopped for real, but I wasn't strong enough. No, because like it was so interesting. It was like the sailing team and acapella were the two dominant forces within that environment.
It's like the most NESCAC liberal arts school shit I've ever heard.
But it's true. I had no idea. But yeah, so, but I was in the in group because I was a singer. They're like, wow, he's so different.
You were an acapella.
Yes, you can say that. Yep.
So was college like a good experience for you then? Or do you feel like it was meh?
No, I actually had a great time at college. I think it was because I felt I had my reckoning that first year of boarding school, actually. Like, so I was like, I got out the kind of like dissonance and I was like, all right, I settled into what that environment was and how to maneuver it. Mm-hmm. So when I went to college, I felt so comfortable that people thought like, oh, that guy's from the suburbs. I'm like, I'm not from the hood like you, but like, thanks, you know.
You're like, I got you fooled.
Exactly, I got you. So yeah, I felt great there, and I actually felt like I evolved a lot more as a person because boarding school was great, but then me and my friends, we like roasted each other constantly. And I didn't realize that there could be like a negative effect to that. And so when I went to college, I didn't really recognize my talents. And I feel like I was kind of like down on myself a bit. And then people were like, wait, no, you're awesome. You're actually great. We're glad to have you around. And I kind of leaned more into those things I was good at. Like I was good at public speaking, or I was good at like singing, or, you know, I wasn't shrinking anymore in certain ways. And so yeah, I felt like the freedom to dive into everything. I was like writing poetry. I was doing performances. I was acting. I was doing research. I was doing, you know, social life and stuff. Like, it just felt like there was nothing that I wasn't able to engage in.
So you got a job in New York. What were you doing? What are you doing? Have you changed since you graduated? Like, what have you been up to in New York since then?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. What have I been doing? So I first got into nonprofit educational leadership program because I came from one. I thought, okay, like I want to keep doing that. And it paid well. And it also felt like kind of full circle moment because now I was one of the people that were like giving out the scholarships. And that felt like really aligned. So yeah, I did that for 2 years. It was also during the pandemic. So we were thinking like very critically about how to get our specific services to the, you know, to the folks that need it the most and need it more than ever. Right. Mm. So yeah, I did that for a while, but then I realized, wow, I need money also.
Like, you're like, yeah, New York's expensive.
Dead ass. Dead ass. So I was like, all right. So I went, then I sent a Hail Mary and tried to go to the university level. And I was like, oh, but it went through. It went through. It was good. And so for the last year, I was doing college admissions at a notable university.
A notable institution.
Exactly.
Some might say an Ivy League institution.
Yeah, some might say that. they might say that. but yeah, now I'm actually at the cusp of making another career jump that would be just huge. I'm really like, feel like right at the cusp, like the fourth round interview for it.
Ooh.
I can't say too much about it, you know, right now, but but yeah, it's just, I'm just trying to climb, you know, create,
yeah,
you know, weave that, like that safety net, have that foundation. I don't like identify like personally with, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm seeing it as a means to an end. I'm still trying to be like a vibrant person that does all these other things, like still makes music, still be creative and all that stuff. But, you know, it's, I get some gratification off of like just having a good career.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that can often be undervalued. It's interesting. New York is the kind of place where everybody is work hard, play hard. Mm-hmm. Everybody here is like a hard worker. You have people are like, what's your day job and what's your night job? Like, there is an expectation that you are doing the most at all times. And,
yeah,
you know, I think also, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like also if you're coming from a liberal arts background, there is a lot of focus on doing work in spaces that are, you know, for the betterment of a lot of people, but oftentimes that work is not well paid.
Nope.
And and there's a lot of like, there's this weird dichotomy of like also being somebody who's liberal and might believe in like all of these different kinds of structures, but wanting, like still wanting to succeed. And unfortunately that success only comes under like the system that we live under today, which is this like capitalistic society.
Exactly.
And obviously I think a lot of people would maybe not agree that that's exactly how they would want society to function. But like, that's like what we live in, and there's no shame in like working hard and having a good career and like making money. Like that's important.
Yes, exactly. You got to find your line. And I don't judge anyone for where they find theirs. I have thoughts about how I want my life to go and, you know, the communities I want to help. And like, you just got to find your line.
Yeah.
For me, I make it make sense to myself. And in the side, I still like, I find the time, even if it's not paying me. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. But just find the time for those like other pursuits like that fill out the rest of who I am, you know?
Mm-hmm. What are those? Like, what are your hobbies outside of work? You've mentioned music a little bit. You said public speaking before. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, wow. You're good with these questions. Yeah, I have a few hobbies. I still, you know, write poetry and things of that nature, mostly for myself. You know, it's just how I process certain things. And then on the side, I do music. I've tried to, you know, keep up with it past the acapella days. So sometimes I might like, you know, record a cover and like put it on my story. Sometimes I, you know, a few years ago, like around when I first moved to the city, I was like, I'm not letting this year end without me being on a stage singing my own music. And so I made that happen. You know, I got an opportunity. My one friend's like, hey, we need an opener. I'm like, all right. You know, and I every day on the train, I was like writing lyrics to the songs. I would head straight to the studio after work, do a couple hours, work on each track and work on the harmonies and all that stuff. And it was a busy time, but it was like really fun. And yeah, then I accomplished that goal, you know. It was around Thanksgiving and it was in like this Irish pub. And But yeah, I made it happen. And people were so pleasantly surprised. You know, people came up to me.
That's like, awesome.
Yeah, it was incredible. Neither one of us were expecting. But it was like really validating. It was like, they were like, thank you for giving us that amazing art. And I was like, thank you for listening.
And there's a lot of gratification to like mm-hmm. creating something and having people consume it in a positive way. So, absolutely. I mean, that's awesome. It takes like a lot to kind of like do those sort of endeavors outside of all the other shit people do. So.
Exactly. So, thanks. No, I mean, look who's talking. So like you be doing things. So
I know I'm busy. Yeah, I'm booked busy all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
So where in New York City do you live?
I live in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
And have you been there since like you moved here a few years ago or have you moved around?
Right. I moved just a little bit. I first moved to Crown Heights, but mm-hmm. I didn't like the roommate and I didn't like what they were asking me to pay because I was right on the main street. So I was like, all right, I need a roommate and I need them to not be white. I'm sorry.
Why are you apologizing to me? I'm not white. Yeah,
exactly true. Like no one in this call is white. But I guess, I just knew from my PWI experience, I was just like, I need this new safe space to be one of with other people who understand what it means to like have a culture and that not be the dominant one. So I found a great situation. So I've been living here with my roommates for about 3 years. I'm loving it.
I mean, Bed-Stuy is a beautiful neighborhood.
Yeah.
It has changed a lot since I was a kid, but it is a really nice neighborhood.
Whoa, wait, are you a Bed-Stuy native or a Brooklyn native?
I'm a New York City native. I grew up in Manhattan.
Got it.
But
I had
friends who lived in Bed-Stuy like growing up. So I have seen it change over the years. Mm-hmm. Like my boyfriend lives in Bed-Stuy, so I've been mm-hmm. spending a lot more time in Bed-Stuy in the past like year.
Yeah.
And some. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, he's white, so it's
yeah,
gentrifier, you know, but like exactly. He knows that.
I've heard that word before.
love him, he knows that also, but like
exactly.
It's not even the whole thing around gentrification, like everybody deserves an affordable and nice place to live.
Of course.
So
of course,
if it's like, you know, we can't put the onus on mm-hmm. the people who are, you know, just trying to find a nice place to live as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's a larger problem. It's not like, it's not individual. The one thing that liberal arts school, like, you know, kind of, you know, taught me in what I studied is like, it's not an individual problem. You're like, you have to.
No, it's a systemic issue.
Exactly. And like, you know, direct our energy that way. Cause one of the other little hobbies is fighting power, fighting against the power, you know what I'm saying? Fighting against the man, right? So I was big into like social justice work in college and I still find ways to do that now, just in ways that feel they can acquiesce more with my schedule. We learned a lot about like power mapping and like finding, building community and coalition. And to like create the through line that is my life, learning a lot about what community means from the Quakers does impact how I do that work. So I kind of bring a lot of empathy to my revolutionary work. Like I know the text, I know what's going on. I've read the statistics. Like no one's escaping accountability in my eyes, but also we can be aware that we're all having a human experience. A lot of us didn't ask to be here and born into what we were. And so we can find coalition and community in certain ways. And so now most of my kind of activist work is like speaking engagements, because I still like to do research on things and I still like to speak and build that kind of like personal community. So it gives me a lot back too. So it doesn't feel like just something I'm doing and throwing into a void. Like I'm getting a lot back. It's reciprocal and I'm just loving it. Yeah.
That's awesome. It's interesting. Like, how do you feel about like living in a neighborhood like Bed-Stuy, a historically Black neighborhood? There's so much culture there.
Yeah.
It's a great place to be. Like, do you feel more aligned there? Do you feel like things are changing for the worse? Like how do you feel about all of that?
Yeah, no, hey, just light stuff.
I'm like, welcome light, to this dating cat. Podcast where we talk about redlining. Like,
no, I love it. I love it. I like it. Actually, it says a lot about me that I really enjoy these kind of conversations. So, like, I think it's related. You know, yeah. So I don't have the background that you do, right? So I didn't grow up in New York. I have family members in Canarsie, so I would like come up a bit as a kid every once in a while, but so I can't say about the direction it's pushing, but I know I enjoy the culture here. I know I enjoy being in a space that has a lot of other Black people, mm-hmm. especially Caribbean people, and kind of like, you know, the culture is really embraced here. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. I was in spaces and even my hometown like was not majority Black or, you know, Caribbean. So I really didn't grow up around a whole lot of other Guyanese people and like Trinis, and like, you know, Jamaican and, you know, like so much culture is here. Mm-hmm. And it means a lot to me to stay connected to that. You know, my parents did bring me back to Guyana like a lot as a kid and, you know, a few times in my older years. And so it's just nice to be in a place where like, you know, Bed-Stuy is like, you know, we are what's normalized. And I don't see that. I hope that does not change. I do see like, you know, some symptoms of gentrification. I live in a neighborhood that feels like it's in the process of it. Like you're still mm-hmm. seeing folks that have been here, you know, folks of color that have been here for a minute, but you're also seeing, you know, certain folks, you know, move in, certain influencers, you know, certain kinds of places, you know, I don't have to explain gentrification, but yeah. So I'm noticing that I'm not like standing on my porch, like waving my fist, like, you know, like,
yeah,
but
of course.
I'm just like recognizing it, seeing what can be done in response to it, going to events in the community that are uplifting the folks that have been in the community and, mm-hmm. you know, just like acknowledging what I'm supporting and not like leading with hate. I feel like you can acknowledge the facts. You can acknowledge the fight. You can be in the fight. But like hate is not the best use of that dynamic energy in my opinion, you know. That's what I learned from the Quakers.
Yeah. Very Quaker outlook. That's awesome. Quaker. Well, you touched on a lot of things, one of them being like Bed-Stuy, like being a good place to be connected to Guyanese culture. A question that I ask like everyone on the podcast is, where do you like to eat and where do you like to go out? I mean, I know Bed-Stuy has like, you know, known for the doubles and the Trini food and things like that. Are there, and that might not even be like where you like to go, but like, where do you like to go? Eat and where do you like to go out?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm close to a lot of great spots to eat and a lot of great spots to go out. So that's great. So I do love like the Caribbean food and stuff like that. And, you know, sometimes I'll walk by one of those buffet style spots and I'm like, oh, it's perfect. And like I walk in and everybody sounds like my auntie or, you know, or my uncle or like, you know, the people that love on me back home. So I'm like, oh, you know, this, we're here. And I can respond sometimes. But sometimes I ask for patty and like, the most American, they call it Yankee way. But I love Thai food. Like I love Thai food. Mm-hmm. And that's big in Bed-Stuy. So one of the spots I hit up, I believe it's called Forever Thai. It's because the ambiance on top of the great Thai food you're getting. So you might get a lychee martini while you're, you know, knocking down some pad see you. Yeah. Wow. I was there for a second. I just, wow.
Came back.
Exactly. I had to bring it back. And then spots to go out, actually, I'm not too far from a spot called Cafe Rizzoli. It is, Haitian spot. It's kind of like it morphs like throughout the week. Like it'll be a kind of like a spot where smooth jazz is playing for free in the middle of the week. But then it goes to the end of the week. It's a club for real. A club you can't get into. Like I'm telling you right now. It's like you better show up at 10. Like 10 p.m. or you're not getting there.
Yeah, I've never been, but I've heard only good things and that it gets packed really, really quickly.
Yup. And it's always a great time. I've seen something I didn't say earlier, just as a quick aside. Something I didn't say earlier is that I love that Brooklyn, especially Bed-Stuy, is a spot with the freaks and the geeks. I'm telling you, You know, you got the weirdos, but you also got the, you know, the interesting folks. And I love to be around, I love to be around all of it. So I went to Cafe Azuli and I saw one of my favorite singers from Spotify, like a real one, hanging out with one of my favorite porn stars.
I'm dead.
Chilling, like chilling with each other. Chilling, vibing. And I'm like, I'm here. We're here.
We're here. We're in it. That's amazing. We were just about to get into the good stuff, which is dating.
Oh, yeah. Right. You asked me how I heard about Drinks First. Yeah.
And you were saying it was a good story that you like dating podcasts.
Yeah, I love dating podcasts. I had a really great date the other day. And I think the biggest reason why is because we listened to the same dating podcast. So just saying.
Was it Drinks First or was it not Drinks First?
It was Drinks First along with a few others. Yeah.
Did you meet through my events or no?
No, that particular person, I didn't meet through your events. But your events bring in such great people. So just didn't happen that particular time. Yeah.
So you found out about Drinks First through the podcast, and which is awesome. I feel like most people find out about the podcast through the events.
So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Because those are like more, they're just like bigger and in like more in the public eye.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense.
But that's awesome. Yeah. I didn't realize you were a fan of the podcast. So I'm glad I'm having you on.
Yeah. I was like, what? Me? Just me? simple me.
And I mean, you've been to a few different Drinks First events at this point. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
I mean, for my own benefit, like what have you liked about them? Have you met anyone through them?
There's a lot of cute folks there, but I've not met anyone through there. But yeah, no, I love going to them. I feel like they're very well considered. Like, I feel like not many people think of, like, a lot of people throw events in the city. But like, I like the ones that, you know, folks are, it's a considered, like how people are spending their time at them. And you usually pick like really great spots, like classy spots, you know, so,
you know,
just to, yeah, just to give you like, just give you a roses.
When I literally asked for it.
you're fishing. Ooh, I got one.
No, but so.
That's so funny.
Do you feel that's like so you meet people in the city by like going out and doing things, or are you on the apps? Like what, how are you meeting people right now?
Right. So I do go out a lot, you know, just like different kinds of events. Maybe it's like the museum one day, maybe it's like a gaming lounge the other day, and maybe it's like a Caribbean bashment, like, you know, or like ass being thrown from every place kind of day. It's really just, I'm
multifaceted. Like yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But so I usually meet a lot of different people out. That's always a toss up. And sometimes the folks that you're drawn to, somebody else was also drawn to them and they're just already dating someone. So, you know, that's what usually happens, to be honest. And in terms of the apps, I am not on the normal one.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like not on, like Tinder's usually people's go-to, right? But I'm not on there. I just don't use it. And then Hinge, I just don't even have one anymore. I'm like on Field.
Yeah.
That's one of the ones I've chosen.
I mean, you know, I've worked with them before, so I'm a proponent for Field.
Yeah, that's true. It was kind of so serendipitous because I remember I'd found your podcast and then I went to the Instagram and you guys were doing a Field event and I was just figuring out about Field and I was like, oh wow, like this would be really cool.
What do you like about Field? Like why are you using that as like your main, or I don't know if it's your main app right now, but
yeah, what a powerful statement for me to say that Field was the only thing I've had.
I know.
That's energy.
It is energy, but it's energy I appreciate. And it's the honesty I appreciate. It's good. I just spoke to somebody else on the podcast, like on another episode, who was telling me about how much they like Field. And this is not a plug. I love them. They're great. I'm not working with them right now anymore. So this is not any like sponsorship or anything, but I like, you know, I love seeing them win. So why is Field like your go-to right now?
It's my go-to because I love the transparency of Field, truly. I feel like I'm it's so wild. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it because we got to choreograph vulnerability. I'm growing more interested in the kink community because just the honesty and like the people's capacity for like, you know, emotional intelligence and certain kinds of conversations. There's very few assumptions. And I'm someone like when I'm meeting new people, I'm not really assuming much. You know, I'm just like, let's learn this person. Let's see what's going on. And field is that kind of like same energy. People are more open-minded. Yeah, it's just honest.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is very similar to a conversation I've had in another episode where I feel like I enjoyed field when I was on it. And I was on it for years. I enjoyed it because it felt like everything was on the table already. Whereas when you're on like Hinge and Bumble, like at the end of the day, a lot of the things that you might experience with somebody on field, like you've already talked about it. You've already talked about where you feel comfortable, what you're expecting, what that person is kind of looking for. Like all of those conversations happen more transparently on an app like Field than they do on Hinge and Bumble, where that like the same sort of events can still transpire on Hinge and Bumble.
Yeah.
It's not inherently like if you're just hooking up with someone and you're hooking up on and you met through like Hinge and Bumble, there's so many more like awkward conversations and small talk that you have to make to get you to the point that like you might get when you just meet somebody on the field.
Yeah, so real, so real. And I feel like I never have conversations where it just jumps to the like to the sexual. That's ironically, I've had none of that happen on field, and I've had that happen like on Tinder where it just goes to a place or, you know, like or Hinge even. But at field, people are like measured, you know, people are like, all right, like even you might see the freakiest thing ever. You might see like only ass cheeks for photos, but then the person's like, how's your day?
They're like, how are you? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I'm like, wow. Like,
it's like just a photo of ass, but their interests could be like Bauhaus architecture. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I'm like the multitudes of this ass.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So that's I love field for that reason. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even say like I've had many hookups on there. Mm-hmm. Like I would say it's definitely like quality, you know? Like it's not like I'm not getting inundated. It's not like, oh, there's just so many I can't even sift through. I know that's some people's experience and like, you know, stop the bragging. Like, I understand you're hot. Like, cool.
You're like, my notifications are racking up.
Exactly. I'm like, all right, cool. And mine's manageable. Like, no, but yeah. So I would like, it's funny because it just reflects a conversation I had with one of my friends. But no, it's quality people, vibrant people. Like I had one field connection result in a speaking engagement. Like the person showed up with three things. It was like the fucking manger and they were a wise man. Like showed up with a blunt for me specifically, banana bread, like a loaf of banana bread and plantain bread. It was like in the same, same thing. And a gig at the nonprofit. They were like, oh, I know you're into like speaking about this thing and we're doing like a campaign for Black men's mental health. The person dropped out. Would you love to come on and you know, do that? And
yes.
Pays well. And I was like, yeah. Oh, yes to all three.
We love that.
Yeah. I'm sure Field would love to know about that story.
Oh, I'm sure Field would love to know about this story. That's like going on the field like diversity media kit. Like
oh my god, you're so right. You're so right. We've gotta protect it at all costs. Protect the story.
I know. Have them pay you.
Exactly. But yeah.
What like introduced you to field? Were you like seeking it out, or was it something that you just stumbled upon from like, I don't know, from my event or from something else? Yeah.
That's a great question. I just have grown more interested in like non-traditional ways of connection, the kink world in general. So it's as much like intellectual curiosity as it is just like, you know, horny energy, I guess.
Yeah.
the freak in me.
Freaking geek.
Hey, that's exactly. Yeah. You see it. You get it. So both of those converged and, found field. And so I was looking for, I was like looking at FetLife a little bit, kind of exploring it, seeing what parts were for me and what parts weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And then Field kind of came out and I was like, oh, wow, like this is so interesting. And
yeah.
So I kind of dived in and I was like, wow, like, I learned a lot about myself through connections that I made on there. And I'm someone, I'm nerdy. The geeky is coming out. I really think that generational curses can be broken through kink. I think that you can learn a lot about yourself. I think that, it's just like such a cool and liberating thing. And so, that's also what drew me to the app.
Tell me more. Like, what have you learned about yourself from kink and the kink community?
The parts of myself that aren't so neat and packaged, and, not saying that I'm not like a transparent, like, open person, but I told you the spaces I was in, mm-hmm. I had to kind of what's still true to me, but also like, we all have parts of ourselves that we work on and stuff and like to present, but then there's parts of us that we don't like to present, and that can have a home too.
Mm.
That can have a home within a kink space. So I've learned, oh goodness. Oh, it's hot in here. I'll offer one thing. So I learned about my tendency as a switch, or like what parts of myself I love that can be dominant, and what parts of myself that I love that can be submissive. And as a Caribbean man, like I could just stop the statement there. Like as a Caribbean man. Exactly. Like dead ass, like the gender roles, the fucking mm-hmm. like everything that seeped into the culture, definitely I was impacted by. And so to feel like liberated by that, or feel free to even explore some of it within a play space,
mm-hmm.
It's like it's so healing. And that's and I'm not saying like, the most experienced person out, like definitely not, but coming with a good mentality and stuff. And I've learned about stuff about myself as a submissive. I've mm-hmm. learned about stuff about myself as a dominant person, and it's illuminated a lot about the kind of person I am or the person I want to be, and lets me like having a place to play then allows me to show up like furthermore in places that are more serious or more critical.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, you really can learn a lot about yourself in these safe spaces mm-hmm. where you also see people mm-hmm. experiencing and also helping guide you in that mm-hmm. experience. Like, yeah, I think a lot of I don't know so much just generally in terms of like historically in the kink space, but mm-hmm. what I see in for the most part is like I joined Field, I think, when I was like 21. I was pretty young. Mm-hmm. And it just, even downloading it kind of opened up this whole new world that I didn't really mm-hmm. know existed. And I do think generally it skews older.
Yes, that's
like
true.
That's the people true. who are involved in like that sort of mm-hmm. kink lifestyle are tend to be older, because I think they have had a lot more time to explore.
Right.
But it's interesting to see more young people engage in the space and have interest in it. Even when I was working with Field, like mm-hmm. their demographics are just generally older, and mm-hmm. my demographics were slightly younger. And so I think that mm-hmm. when we partnered together, it helped bring awareness to this space that like seems really daunting. But mm-hmm. if you are mentally and physically prepared or interested in learning about it, it's a good place to start. Even if you don't interact with it, it's like you can kind of scroll through and just see how people are presenting themselves and seeing mm-hmm. how like what language they're using. Like, oh, I didn't even know that the term like heteroflexible existed, yeah, or like what's the difference for people between bisexuality, pansexuality, like what does agendered mean, like what what is ethical non-monogamy, and what does that mean to like certain people? Like these are all terms that I didn't really understand or learn about until like that kind of world was opened up to me. And it just shows you that there are different ways that people engage with monogamy, sexuality, relationships, and connection. And that it doesn't all have to exist in this one binary where it's like, we're dating to meet somebody, to get married, to have a life, to have kids. Like that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And it's cool to see like older people kind of engage in that kind of lifestyle in different ways. And there are people who do have that really like nuclear life, but still have other aspects to it that remain interesting and exploratory. So I think that's so valuable. Also, just as like, I don't know about you, but like as an immigrant, I was like, my parents never talked to me about sex.
Never, never. What? They all go to the same class. Okay. We are going to say nothing, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
like we're just going to let them figure it out.
Exactly. It'll be so fun. They'll be so dynamic once they do figure it out. Or maybe they never will, and it'll be fun for us.
Yeah, literally. It's like, and I'm sure, I don't know. I see some of my white friends, and I'm like, you talk to your parents about this stuff?
Wild.
Like, that is so not something that exists for me. I think as I've gotten older, I, like, definitely have opened up to my parents more about, like, relationships and things like that. Yeah, it's been, like, a new thing for me. And even just, I have, like, an older brother, so, like, even just learning to talk to him a little bit more about like my romantic relationships and things like that. For the longest time kept that part of my life so close to my chest came to my family. But I think like that immigrant kind of like, we don't talk about sex. Like it doesn't exist until it exists for you. And like, you just sort of figure it out on your own. It's cool to see that there are other ways to explore beyond like just the normal birds and bees that we like know about.
Absolutely. Oh my god, you put that so well. I'm gassing you heavy, but like I love that you put that so well. That was a joy to listen to. I completely agree. I agree they say nothing. And I'm also I'm really proud of you that you're like, you took those steps to like kind of align those two parts of yourself that were once separate. That feels super nice. I feel like I can imagine that feels super nice.
Look, it's a learning curve. Like it's not something that I'm like fully there yet, but even having this podcast and like talking about some of the things I talk about so openly here, and my mom listens to it, like
wow. Oh my gosh, yeah, my mom will never gonna see it.
I'm like, mom, don't listen to this episode, like just don't do it, like
she's like, I just tuned in.
I'm like, if you want to preserve this relationship, like just don't listen to it.
Yeah,
my dad
yeah,
just like doesn't listen clear. To the podcast, which is could not be a better case scenario for me. Like
absolutely,
he doesn't have the bandwidth to want to listen to it anyway, so I'm like, that's great. Perfect. Like just you keep doing you,
same
like
energy. Keep that same energy pop.
Yeah. I'm like, that makes things a lot easier for me. So.
Yeah, exactly. No, I, gosh, it's not like I'm as transparent with my family as I can be, right? Like they are still very much Caribbean, very, very, very much Caribbean. And I just think about the kind of situation it would create for me. They, you know, just unfortunately just aren't quite there yet. And I think it would just kind of be a shock to their system more than anything else, in a way that I don't think they would have that metamorphosis and like come out of the chrysalis. I'm like, I accept everything and everyone. Like, you know,
oh yeah,
think,
absolutely. And it's not, I'm not saying I talk to my parents about sex. We don't.
Right.
It's more so like, oh, you know,
I'm doing
like I'm in a relationship and this is like how the relationship is going. And like, that's, you know, not something we would talk about before.
Exactly. So, I've never. Yeah.
Baby steps.
baby steps. But, I, you know, that's it's just impressive, you know.
Well, have you been in relationships before?
Yeah. I've been about like five. I guess it oscillates between. Yeah. Yes, I have.
tell me about that.
They were all extremely illuminating. While I am someone that like, I choose very carefully who I want to get, share that intimate space with, like in that way. The people that we've just connected have been, I think we've both been great mirrors for each other, learned a lot through each other. You said you want to hear about them?
Yeah. Tell me about like, what was your longest relationship?
I would say a little under a year.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like sum it up. There was some like on again, off again, but I would like condense it to just a little under a year.
Mm-hmm. And are you somebody who kind of knows that when you're in a relationship, like if it's going to work or not, or do you think?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. A great opportunity to talk about one of my red flags.
Let's hear it.
Wow.
You're exposing yourself, you know?
Yeah, I think that's okay though. I feel
no,
like
it's great. It's,
you know, that's who I am. I would say this. I didn't have love modeled for me like that.
Mm-hmm.
My pops, you know, I love him. I have a lot of great things to say about him, but I would say that he was lost. In his youth and like tried to find himself through many like different partners and stuff, and it kind of led to a not the best family situation, I'll say that. I think like my anxiety sometimes about a relationship is like because I'm trying to not be like him in that way, because I know what kind of fallout it creates. It's like I get just really nervous. I'm like, am I making the right decision? The biggest thing like I have to like pick apart when I'm in a relationship is like, is this the right call? And it's not about the person, but simply about like thinking about my dad and like him thinking each time it was the right call. this is it, you know, number six, this is it actually. I would just want a bit more discernment than that.
Yeah.
And so that's not... Like, I guess some people could say it's a red flag, but it has like real groundings for me, you know?
Yeah.
And it's something I'm actively working on, like therapy, and I have made a lot of progress with. But yeah, so.
You know what I think is also really interesting, just because we were talking about like the kink community before as well, but I think this idea of like different ways of connecting with people and having relationships is not something that has been so mainstream. But I've seen it in the past few years become like way more like people are, I think, are way more open to talking about like, oh, an open relationship, or what does it look like to be non-monogamous or something like that. And those sort of structures, one, don't exist really in immigrant spaces. if they do, it's few and far between. I feel like just hearing about things with your dad, maybe it was, there's so much pressure on us to choose the right person, like the one right person. And I don't necessarily, this is just my personal opinion, I don't think that, well, one, I've never believed there's one right person for somebody. Like, I think that there are multiple people that you can have really deep connections with throughout your lifetime. But, you know, I don't think that there was this idea that you could maybe like have those connections in a way that are respectful to other people, and also to maybe your family and other like situations you're in. So it's interesting to hear about that and how you're also in this kind of like new space of connection and like learning about things like that.
Yeah. So this actually reminds me of a conversation I had with my friend around the time. I'm so kind of glad that we found each other as friends, because we were both in like similar exploratory like phases in our life. Our friendship didn't have the underpinnings of any kind of like those kind of connections, because we truly, it was like just during the pandemic, we were in a place where we need a friend. We need a bestie right now. So we had this really amazing open talk when we started working together. All right, this was a coworker on top of it. we had this great talk about how with monogamous relationships, there can be this like weird assumption that you both know the rules. Mm. You both know the rules of what is cheating for the other person just because you watched a certain few rom-coms and they watched a certain few rom-coms and you got some like message about it from your family and they got a completely different message. So you're both in this thing that you would both call monogamous, but you have vastly different like definitions of what's okay with it. And that is not the case in at least like kink aware or like ENM aware or polyamorous aware connections. Simply because like you know that you have to talk the rules out. You know that every single person is different the same way every single kind of connection is different. There's that understanding. And so you make the rules together and it becomes more vibrant and makes more sense. That was our kind of philosophy and why we both like decided to learn more about it for ourselves.
So do you feel like what you're looking for next, like are you looking to be in a relationship? Are you looking for certain kinds of connections? Do you consider yourself a monogamous person?
I consider myself, that's a great question. I consider myself, I see the beauty of monogamy for sure. I think I definitely can, I know I can show up in a monogamous relationship and be fulfilled as long as there's other things that are like, that need to be there. So if it's monogamous, there's things that need to be there. There needs to be like an exploratoriness in the way that we approach like intimacy and sex and stuff. There has to be a certain kind of level of deep transparency and a deep exploration, truly. I am also open to open connections. My specific experience in it is like a bit more limited, just because it takes time to be in those spaces. You know, you're not just like running into somebody who's open every day on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you are, you just don't know. I don't come across it too often, so I haven't been in one. But I know about myself that I'm someone that is not quick to jealousy. I know I'm someone that's like loves to like talk things out, and you know, someone that I put a lot of effort and cherish my like friends in a very deep way. That's like what I'm seeing is not always the standard. So I know I have capacity for those kinds of connections. It's just about like learning more, and if it comes around, it's generally how I feel. So yeah.
Do you gravitate to like a certain kind of person? Like, do you think you have a type?
Yeah, it's do I gravitate or does a certain kind of person gravitate to me, or both?
Maybe both. You tell me.
Oh, okay. So let's maybe start with who I gravitate towards.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely gravitate towards people who are open-minded. I realized recently that I really like people that are quite transparent. I think a lot of people think they are, but like I've only come across a few people that like are transparent in a way that they also like. I like the way that those people owned their mistakes, owned their flaws. Unfortunately, oh man, again, we excavating right now. I come from a situation in which I had to kind of try to guess what people's intentions were within my household, and like, oh, like, you know, people didn't know how to talk about their emotions. So like somebody would act weird and I'm like, okay, time to put my hat on and put the clues together as to what's going on with this person. So I feel a lot of safety around people that are like, all right, yeah, like, you know, I was upset. I apologize, or I am currently upset. And to be honest, I'm not being fair to you. I'm not, you know, or like, hey, I went and go talk to my friend and I'm acting like pretty whack.
Yeah.
To me, that's really one of the highest kinds of romance and intimacy, just because I'm like the safety of knowing and understanding.
Yeah, just having that emotional intelligence.
Exactly. And I've met a lot of people that, you know, can speak eloquently about their emotions, but can't admit where they're wrong, which is funny, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, like this really comes from my father wound. Whoa. But like, I swear to God, I will not apologize for getting the wrong toast yesterday.
Like, just say sorry. Like, you could be the most self-aware person, but like, just say sorry. You know?
Just say sorry. It is so funny. It's so funny. And it goes the extra mile with me. So I love folks that have that aspect to them. I love folks. Here's a big one for me. I love folks that have a beautiful like merging of, or just like a connection between their masculine and feminine energy. I realize that I'm someone that I can't be with someone that only sits in one or the other. So that's like what I've learned through like some of the relationships I've been in. Like, you know, someone who's like just sits in the dominant energy, just sits in the you know, submissive energy, or whatever binary is in your mind. For me, like I know for myself, I definitely feel like a mixture of both.
Yeah.
Like I'm attuned with feminine energy, I'm attuned with my masculine energy, and they're both pretty chill. So I find myself very much drawn to folks that are a blend of the both and like actualize that.
Yeah. I mean, you seem like the kind of person who, obviously, everybody contains multitudes, but you have experienced a lot of different dichotomies in your life, whether it's like, you know, being at a PWI as somebody who's, you know, come in on scholarship, or somebody who is like born in a, or grew up in an environment that is incredibly maybe dominant and masculine, but getting in touch with their kind of feminine side or their submissive side. Not that those two are intertwined.
Yeah, they don't have to be the same.
Yeah, they're not the same. Exactly.
But they, you know, I feel comfortable with like either all of the words that, you know, we apply to those kind of things.
You're somebody who exists in like multiple spaces.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm like, yeah, definitely being read. Cause it's real. You know, I didn't mention throughout our conversation that like I spent a summer being a sex educator, like a safe sex educator.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like right after high school. And that was an experience again, like, you know, that and I was the only man that was on the team. I was just doing these presentations around New Jersey. And I was like, whoa, like I learned so much about this. And so these dichotomies exist in my life all throughout, and they will continue to.
Yeah.
And again, like I found like a lot of peace in it. I like the lens it gives me. And yeah. And so like, I remember, I know the difference in dates between the people who have like actualized that and the people that haven't.
Yeah. You want somebody who can like be in tune with multiple spaces within them.
Exactly. Like I can talk about one particular instance if you would let me.
Yes, please.
She said, yes, please. So one time there was this person, I'm gonna be as like nondescript as possible. we worked together for a little while, and you know, this is not the same person as the other person. I just made a lot of connections at that space. So we kind of knew each other for almost a year, and we kind of like, you know, see each other around the office, something light. And then we went to like a birthday party of one of the, you know, members, and we just got stuck on the same couch. And we kind of like, oh, wow, like we actually have a lot in common. And this is a person I would actually describe her as somebody that she was bi, you know, she was queer, and she sat in both of those energies. Like, it was kind of really awesome to behold. Even before I had the word to like talk about it, I was like, there's something about her. Like she's taking up space, you know, she's like warm and present, but not like, she's not hiding behind anything. There's just like something, because sometimes when you're thinking like somebody that's like super dominant, you're thinking like, oh, but they're like not warm, you know, or you think it's somebody like submissive, but like, oh, but they are also like taking up space in an interesting way. And it was really clear that we had made like a connection. And so this person was like, hey, like, I'd love to go out with you sometime. And I was like, oh, wow. And this was a woman. And the only reason that's important to mention is just because of, you know, existing gender roles, and like, that doesn't happen a whole lot. And I'm like, oh, bet. All right. So we pulled up to the spot later that weekend. And, you know, we had this really, really vibrant conversation. And I'll say this one thing that like really that really touched me. And honestly, she said, in you, I truly see such a beautiful combination of masculine and feminine energy. And that is super attractive to me.
Mm.
I had never heard those words. And throughout the journey of my life that I've that we've talked about so far, like, I'd never heard something so affirming in my life at that point. And I was like, that's what it is. I'd never had words for it before, but that's what it is. And so I need to see that in someone else, but I also love when it's seen.
In you.
Yeah, exactly. When it's seen in me.
That's awesome. I love that. Do you feel like physically you are drawn to any specific type of person?
That's interesting. I think over the course of like the kinds of people I've connected with, it's been across the board. I am a large person. I'm like, you know, I don't know if you want me to say my height or whatever, or these other things, but you know, I'm a tall guy and, you know, just on the bigger end, but like of the people I've connected with, you know, folks that are like, you know, more petite, folks that are curvier, everything within that and more. And so I feel like I like somebody that can dance. That's, you know, sometimes like, you know, I like somebody that got, you know, got something to shake, even if it's spirit, even if it's non-tangible, you got something to shake. And that's what I like. So yeah, it's, yeah. So physically that's how I describe it.
Yeah.
Yes, King, give us nothing.
Yes, literally. I mean, look, like you don't have to have a physical type. Like you know, there are the people that like you might historically end up with, but that doesn't mean like that you're not.
I can give you.
Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, okay. So generally, I do connect with curvier folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, if I'll be honest, I'm a little curvy.
Slim Thick King.
I'm dead. I'm so dead. But no, like, yeah. And it's just like, it's cool. You know, it's not something that disqualifies anybody, but like, I will be honest, like, I connect with that more. It's more present within my culture and like what I've been around. And you know, like, it's just great. And that's all. That's it. Yeah.
You're like, I like an ass. Like,
I'm dead. Oh,
you're like, let me find the most like eloquent way for me to say this.
I'm dead. Let me get my next cue card. Yeah. I got an intern that's working overtime over here. So I'm like, okay, yeah.
Like, all right, this is clean. How you that's, put it. That's, like,
exactly. That's clean. That's disinfected. They'll love it. They'll love it.
It's valid. Everybody has their preferences. Like,
yeah. I also say I'm like, you know, very much into folks of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like kind of the go-to. You know, just I love folks, especially that like have culture they can call on,
mm-hmm.
Within our conversations. That's just always super great for me to connect with. And in style, I'll say that. That'll be another thing I'll mention. I like if you are, as a person, drawn to combat boots as you are drawn to like high heels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like someone that just, again, like their style oscillates between that too, because I feel like mine does.
Yeah.
You know, I might be wearing like a really open, I mean, I might be wearing a shirt that has like my chest hair out, you know, and like, you know, like does the open shirt like from the 70s type vibe. Or I might, you know, wear like a suit, like, you know, mm-hmm. or like look more like preppy one day or like streetwear another day, like put a flower in my hair one day and like, you know, put a fitted on another day. Like it's just,
we're coming back to that like duality. You want people to exist outside of just one kind of box.
Exactly. And that, you know, it's really awesome to see. I feel like really drawn when I'm like, wow. Like, you know, I went to the smoothie shop earlier today and I peeped someone that was like, you know, making those kind of statements with their fashion.
Mm.
I was like, whoa. And then we struck up a dope ass conversation. And like, it was me, her, and my roommate. We were all like just chatting and vibing. And then we all headed home. It was good vibes.
Cool.
So that's how I like know I should walk up to someone is when I see that.
Yeah. All right. I know we've talked a lot today. So basically, I end every episode with a segment called Shots, where I ask rapid fire questions.
Oof. All right. I'm ready.
You're ready to do some shots?
Yeah. Yeah. Be quicker than my intern I got over here.
All right.
I got you.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl, for sure.
Work hard or play hard?
Shit, play hard.
Dine out or delivery?
Delivery. Let's have something at home. But I love dining out, but delivery is it sometimes.
Laundry or dishes?
Dishes.
TikTok or Instagram?
TikTok, yeah.
Money or fame?
Fame.
Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Insane answer. Okay.
Unhinged answer.
Absolutely unhinged answer.
Damn, you lost the Coke deal. I'm sorry.
Spicy or mild?
Mild.
As a Guyanese man, you're going to tell me mild?
I know. That's the thing that's going to get me got. Honestly. Yeah. I lost people with that one.
My that's fault. The red flag.
Well, that actually is the red flag. Oh, man. That's so funny.
Coffee date or drinks date?
Drinks date, yeah.
What's your favorite season?
Autumn.
What is your favorite song right now?
Oh, fuck. It's called Switch by Destin Conrad.
What is your drink of choice?
Oh, shit. I just had an amazing drink last night. It was like a whiskey highball with like peach flavoring.
Ooh. And different. If you had a boat, what would you name it?
Shit. The Flying Dutchman.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on.
Of course.
If my listeners are interested in meeting our wonderful guest, you can do so by going on drinks.first on Instagram. There's a form in the link in bio that you can fill out. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for coming on.